Summer Afternoons with Greg Carey on 4BC.
Politics in the United States, as always, remains fascinating. When I left radio at the end of 2013, Barack Obama was into his first year of his second term, and then came 2016 and the election of Donald Trump, something that didn't totally surprise my next guest. In fact, he wrote me in 2015 that Hillary Clinton was widely disliked and the election could well surprise. TJ O'Hara actually ran as an independent candidate for the presidency from California in 2012 and is now one of the most respected independent analysts, authors, and commentators in the United States. And he joins me from California. It's lovely to talk to you, TJ.
Wonderful to talk to you, Greg, and thank you. It's an honor to join you in your brief return to the airwaves.
Thank you very much. Remind us why you ran in 2012.
I didn't run to win, just so that your audience knows that I'm not totally crazy, because they're running auctions rather than elections in the United States, and they have been for quite some time. So I was up against two well-known people who were going to spend over $1 billion each to make sure one of them was able to buy the election. And I was running for a different reason. I wanted to create a more informed electorate, show people what they had the right to expect from a candidate, somebody who had actually prepared and vetted the issues and had literal solutions. We don't run people like that. We run people who just parade around and present talking points and buy their way into the presidency.
Yeah, that disqualifies a lot of people, doesn't it, when you talk about $1 billion plus just to run?
It disqualified me.
And everybody else. Mate, so much has happened. I was thinking about this the other day. So much has happened since you and I last spoke. I'm just wondering, what have been those undercurrents? As I said, Barack Obama was still president. Then along came Donald Trump and wins the election that everyone thought Hillary Clinton would win. What have been those undercurrents that have influenced these last 9 years?
I think there have been two substantive ones, but beyond the first, which is an utter disinterest in fiscal responsibility, the political divide has widened immensely in the United States. The preamble to our Constitution has been tacitly amended to begin with "we the parties" rather than "we the people." And when you think about behaviorally the law of contrast, you have a psychological principle that individuals base their behavior on comparisons of opposites rather than similarities. And the parties have taken that to the extreme. You've run in the election since you and I last talked, establishment versus anti-establishment. Clinton being establishment, Biden being establishment, Trump clearly being anti-establishment. And the voters have demonstrated that they're drawn to celebrities rather than statespersons. Mm. Name recognition triumphs over character. It triumphs over capability. Narcissism in the United States among our leaders has become an expectation, if not a prerequisite, for running for the highest office. And in concert with this, we have a freedom of the press that's given way to what I would term bias of the press. And that's aided by the electorate's dependence on talking points as if they're actually true. And in the United States, unfortunately, and I hope it's not true of Australia, but the term journalistic integrity has become almost an oxymoron.
Certainly far more partisan in your country than ours, but we have those tendencies. It was interesting watching these last years, TJ, because a lot of people said Donald Trump caused these great divisions in the United States. But it seemed to me that Donald Trump could not possibly have been elected had there not already been huge divisions and resentment of the major parties within the United States. Is that right or wrong?
I think you're correct. I think what he did fascinatingly well, if not something that I would endorse, but he recognized what was happening. And he's relatively inarticulate, in my opinion, but he almost dumbed down the candidacy to the point that it could appeal to a broader range. We don't have a very informed electorate, which is, as I said, why I ran back in 2012, to try and encourage people to do the research, do the hard work to become informed. He tapped into the exact opposite. And he also began to exploit social media, which you and I talked about back in 2012.
Yes.
That younger generations could make a dent, that social media could make a dent. And he exploited the social media side of that equation.
So where to from now? I mean, the election campaign really begins in earnest in 2023. Joe Biden says he might run in 2024. So a few questions. Will he? And on the other side, Donald Trump has already announced his candidacy. This at the same time as the popular governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, leads him clearly in the early polls. So how do you see the next 18 months, 2 years unfolding?
Well, on the Democrat side, I think President Biden obviously is the incumbent. And he has said, as you mentioned, that he intends to run. The only caveat is if his party were to invoke the 25th Amendment to force him out of office because they want change, it wouldn't do this, and I've been saying this since day one, it would never invoke anything based on his potentially diminished capacity, some could argue. It would never do that until 12 noon on January 21st or sometime thereafter. Why? Because at that point in time, the sitting vice president would become president. And any moment after noon on January 21st, it doesn't count as a full term. So the vice president who would take over would get 2 years not having a full term counted against her in this case. And in that case, she could run for two consecutive terms. So the party, if they were playing a long-term strategy, could actually control that office for up to 10 years if she were to be able to win two more terms. The thing is that she's almost President Biden's best insurance policy. Because she's proven to be relatively ineffective in her lesser role. So, of course, there are many others who might be willing to challenge him on a basis of age and capacity. You have Secretary Pete Buttigieg, who will pursue any photo op he can to try and position himself for that. You've got my governor of California, Governor Newsom, and a variety of others who, while they say they aren't running, they're running. They may not run if Joe Biden runs, but if Joe drops out, I think you're going to see a plethora of individuals try and jump in. But if he does announce, I think the party may quash their efforts. They've done things like moving the South Carolina primary up in the schedule to the first primary. That's the one that tipped the scales in his favor. And when you look back on 2020, basically all the other Democratic candidates were convinced to back out of the primary shortly thereafter.
Tell me on the other side, TJ, Donald Trump we know is a candidate. He's running again. We know all the strife he's in, et cetera. Ron DeSantis, governor of Florida, is doing very, very well. There are other potential candidates. What's likely to happen here?
Well, I think unless former President Trump is indicted, he'll do everything in his power to win the nomination. And what he has going for him is that the Republican Party won't say no to him too early. They want to say no, but they won't do it too early because they're afraid that he might split the party. If he creates an independent run prior to the primaries, they've lost control and they've lost the election. However, if they can get him into the primaries, there's this thing called a sore loser law in the United States. In many of the states, it differs by states, but many of the states have a sore loser law. So if you lose in the primary of a party, you're not allowed to run as an independent or a member of any other party thereafter.
So they want him running in the primaries and to lose the primaries.
I wouldn't doubt that that's what they're planning to do. They also have a pretty deep bench to run against him. As you mentioned, Florida Governor DeSantis, some like him, some don't like him. But he's actually done a fairly good job in Florida if you back the personality out a little bit. He's a little abrasive, as former President Trump clearly was. But you also have people like former governor and United States Ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley. You've got former U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. These are people with serious credentials that they bring to the table. So I think the Republican Party has a deeper bench than the Democrats, but there could be competition on both sides.
Okay. Let me ask you one final question today, and I'd love you to come back on while I'm still here for another 3 weeks. But from a distance, and it's not always accurate from a distance, but as we look at America, it just looks, TJ, to be a less civil, a more polarized nation, media, politics, partisanship. I guess social media feeds into that, the echo chamber. There's a kind of nastiness that wasn't always as obvious. Is that a fair comment?
That's a very fair comment. And it gets into an issue we don't have time to address today, but it gets into a behavioral conditioning that the parties have exploited. Simply said, just to underscore it, you have people who are both the cause and the cure. If they cast an informed vote, we'd solve many of our problems. Instead of becoming informed, though, we spend our time trying to live up to the labels we choose to apply to ourselves. And there's a thing called in-group behavior, and people will gravitate towards that. They will try and become the person that they believe the party demands them to be. It's a way of maintaining their social status and so forth. And the parties underscore, Democrats in particular, play the game of identity politics. So they try and underscore the behavioral conditioning that they've layered for decades and spent billions of dollars building so that the adaptive unconscious gravitates towards that. And what they've done is created a political divide.
Massive.
That law of contrast, the more different two people are and the closer they're placed together, and you don't get any closer than running against each other for president of the United States or any of the other federal issues.
So how do you bring that divide together? I know Harry Truman, I used to love Harry Truman and read a lot of his books, and he said back in the 50s that he was worried about bigness. Now, back then, America had 150 million people and no social media. Now you've got 330 million people, lots of media, and lots of social media. How do you find some common ground?
I think media is going to be critical to the issue because what you have to do is overcome the behavioral conditioning. Right now, the media in the United States, traditional media in particular, found out they can make money off of politics, not only in the ad buys of the parties, which are in the hundreds of millions of dollars, but by the fact that if they play to confirmation bias, which is a need of people who identify with parties, they want to hear their party being given credit for being better than the other party. It's a comparison issue. And the traditional media is playing to that because it maintains and builds audience share. And the bigger the audience, as you well know, your ad rates go up. So it's a profit game. Social media gives the opportunity to overcome that and to create legitimate candidates and legitimate visibility that can overcome the economic barrier that's been erected by the parties. And when I say overcome that, if they can make a third party or an independent candidate a big enough story, then the traditional media has to cover that candidate.
Yeah.
That's the only way to break down the behavioral conditioning. Unfortunately, I don't think it can be done in an election cycle. I think it has to be an independent show, very much like you present on the air. You don't exhibit any bias. You present people, you let them have their say, and at the end of the day, you leave it up to your audience to decide what they believe. If we had more shows like yours, this problem would be more addressable in the United States.
Oh, you're very kind. TJ, there are so many other issues I wanted to kick around. Your first speech, your First Amendment, rather, free speech, guns, all kinds of things. We'll lock in a time if it's okay. We'll come back in the next few weeks.
Love to do that.
Thank you, TJ. TJ O'Hara. And TJ's website, if you'd like to access it, and there's a lot of good writing on there, a lot of good thinking, TJOHara.com, TJOHara.com. Summer afternoons, 4BC.